Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey friends, Kate and Dory here.
Hi.
We are currently on a little vacation break.
Yeah.
Because everybody needs their rest.
But especially us.
Oh, yes. We are the two hardest working women in podcasting.
Close.
There are many other hardworking women in podcasting, but we're some of them. So we're taking a little rest. And while we do, we're replaying some of our fave eps. And this week, we've got episode 49, Money Talks with Amanda Clayman.
Yeah, she got into some real intense questions that our listeners sent in. She's a financial therapist, and whew.
Therapist, she did.
We went deep.
We did. It was very healing.
It was healing.
It was a really satisfying and interesting conversation.
I agree. So enjoy our conversation with Amanda Clayman. Hello, welcome to Forever 35. A podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Dory Shafrir.
And I'm old Kate Spencer.
And we're not experts.
We're just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Yep.
Yep. It's true.
Oh.
Whoa.
We're so in sync.
We are vibing.
Mm-hmm. How you doing?
Well, I am back from vacation.
Oh, you sure are.
And can I tell you, I did get a facial right before I left. Mm. And the wonderful Courtney Chisano.
Yes.
Who gave me a facial.
Friend of the pod.
She loaded me up with little sample size serum-y goodies.
What?
To use on my face on the plane.
Oh my goodness.
It was a true treat.
That's so fun.
So I had a whole, like a little ritual that I was doing. I used a Nuori moisture mask that goes on white, but then like you kind of rub it in and it's clear so nobody could know. My daughter was horrified when I was putting it on at the airport yesterday. She's like, it's all white.
So you didn't you have like a horrifying experience with a mask when you were going
yes.
to Italy?
Yep. It peeled off all over everybody.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like my skin was falling off
so
my
that
face.
That didn't happen.
An Italian man stared at me. That didn't happen. It was
great.
Very discreet. And then I misted myself through the whole flight like a wild woman.
Mm.
And then when I landed and washed my face, I put on this cream. I don't even know what it was. She gave it to me in a little tiny container. And then this brand is Emergency. They're these little Hydra repair capsules.
Ooh.
Of this really hydrating oil.
Ooh.
That made my skin feel amazing. And I also used it on my daughter because she had a sunburn on her face, and every cream I tried to put on was making her was feeling burning.
Oh my goodness.
She would like scream at me.
Speaking of sunburns, I was going to compliment you on not looking tan.
Thank you. I worked so hard at not getting tan.
Yeah. You look great.
Thank you so much. I look like a beekeeper when I go out in the sun because I am just covered head to toe.
That's the best way to be.
I'm so paranoid about getting sunburned.
No, same.
And because as a kid, I spent a lot of time, like I was telling my children, I used to get sunburned on my scalp.
Ooh.
Oh, it was so painful.
That sounds very painful.
Yeah, and they get so mad when I like lather them down.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to say that I'm like, y'all, the alternative is so much worse.
I know.
It's painful and it's not good for you.
I used to get so annoyed when my dad would, you know, my parents would try to put sunscreen. So my dad's a redhead, super
He's
pale,
fair, yeah.
And they were always trying to put sunscreen on us. And I was like, nah. But, you know, I get it now, of course.
Hindsight.
I'm like, thank God they were trying to slather me with sunscreen.
So that's what I was up to. I hydrated on a flight. It felt great.
That's great.
I feel very fortunate to have gotten to spend some time with my family on vacation. It was a very last minute trip. I do want to just say where I got the trip.
Please tell us all.
Let me tell you, Costco If you ever find out about this podcast, you got to give me like $5 for the advertising I've done here.
I mean, they should really be like the presenting sponsor of this podcast.
We booked a vacation through Costco Travel.
I am really proud of you.
It was so affordable. We got a breakfast deal. It was just great. Rental car. I mean, Costco, you got everything. I imagine listeners are starting to fucking eye roll me every time I'm like, and guess where this came from? So listeners, I'm sorry. I know it's getting annoying. I'll shut up. But I did book a trip through Costco Travel.
And it went great.
And it was great. So what am I going to do? It's just Costco keeps being so good to me.
I get it.
Oh, boy. Anyway, Dory, how are you doing?
You know, I am doing pretty well.
You are nesting.
I am full on nesting. So before we left, our kitchen was in a state of disarray because they had ripped out the old kitchen, which was, as discussed previously, almost 100 years old.
Yes, listeners, if you don't know, here in Dory's rental.
Yeah, rental.
She had an old kitchen.
I did.
I'm repeating what you just said.
Indeed.
Shut up, Kate. But like, no one had ever touched this kitchen
in
100 years.
There were parts of it that no one had ever touched, including the sink, the cabinets, and the countertops. And the sink was actually starting to sink.
It was tilted.
It was tilted, and clearly, like, at some point was going to fall. So our landlord finally agreed to replace it. We are also getting a dishwasher, which is getting delivered tomorrow.
So exciting.
But of course, it all took much longer than they thought it would. They said it would take 4 to 5 days. It took almost 2 weeks. And we were without a kitchen sink for that whole time. Ooh. Which, guess what, is annoying.
Yeah, I bet. But that's weird.
And so it was nice to come back from Thanksgiving and to have all of that, except for the dishwasher, have it all be done. And I was like, oh my God, thank God. So we got back on Saturday night. And on Sunday, I ordered some stuff from Target and some stuff from the Container Store. And I did pick up in store. And I'll link to all the stuff I used on the website. But, you know, I bought a new flatware organizer. I bought new trays to put other kitchen utensils in. Yes, Kate.
I haven't raised my hand on this podcast in a while, but I'm bringing it back. I would love to watch an Instagram stories series about your kitchen reorganization.
You know, it's funny you say that. I had initially asked Matt if he would shoot an Instagram live of me like putting stuff away in the kitchen, and he was like, okay. But then yesterday, our schedules just got a little crazy and we didn't have time. And so I ended up doing most of it myself. But yeah, I will give everyone a tour of the kitchen. I got some bins.
I got a taste of it. That's why I'm suggesting.
Yeah.
We all want to see.
I mean, it's not done. I should also say that part of the reorg was a little bit of a purge. It turned out we had a lot of water bottles.
We have so many,
like,
water bottles.
With logos, you know, logo water bottles.
You accumulate water bottles.
Yeah. And yeah. I was like, we don't need these.
I would love, is there a donation system for water bottles?
I was going to just put them outside and with a sign that says free.
Okay.
And hope that people took them. I guess I could drop them off at, you know, I bring stuff to the Council of Jewish Women. I don't know if they will like old water bottles, but maybe they will. So that felt good to get rid of all that stuff. We also decided to, we had a mountain of, I use the word Tupperware, even though none of it is technically Tupperware, but you know what I mean.
Plasticware.
And you know what? I'm really trying to get away from plastic in my life because mm-hmm. it's just not good for you. And especially when you're pregnant, it's supposed to be an endocrine disruptor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, we're trying to switch to glass. So we had some glass containers, but I decided I was going to buy one other small set of glass food storage containers, and we were going to get rid of all the old plastic. Because we also decided we had way too much of it anyway. In addition to it being plastic, what did we need with all of this stuff? We just didn't need it all. So that also felt good to really like streamline that down. So I'm feeling really good about that. But everything, like, our kitchen is old and they only replaced like half of it. So there's still some old cabinets there. Nothing is like the right size. Like, nothing is like the standard size. So I bought something to hang over a cabinet door to like store some stuff in, and it was like too wide. And, you know, it's just like the shelves are narrower than like standard shelves now. So everything, I was like measuring everything, and but I found some good stuff. And I'm like, I'm feeling very calmed by it all.
Bins have that effect.
And, you know, one of the most important things I learned from when we hired a professional organizer that is so obvious, but I never truly internalized it, is putting like with like.
You've said this before.
It was a game changer. It's like, no, you don't put one cookie sheet in that cabinet because it fits there. And then you put two others over there.
Yeah.
And then you have one more that just lives somewhere else.
I still kind of do that, but I've gotten better.
You know, just like everything. And then like the cookie sheets shouldn't be with the napkins. They should be with other stuff that you use to bake. All the baking stuff should be together.
Yeah.
All the things that you use to prepare food, all the, you know, preparing food utensils should be together. Like, kind of thinking like that has been very helpful for me, especially when organizing my kitchen. Is it perfect? No, in part because everything is weirdly shaped, and so sometimes there isn't room for everything, but it's a lot better than it was. So I'm feeling good about that. And then the other thing, if I may.
You may.
My sister gave me a bunch of hand-me-downs when we were at her house for Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
She said, make sure to leave room in your suitcase because I'm giving you some hand-me-downs. And I said, oh, I will. And another friend had previously brought me over a bunch of hand-me-downs. And so Karen's suggestion was to separate everything by size and store it by size.
Yes.
Like she was saying, I had a container for 0 to 3 months, a container for 3 to 6 months, and then you can just take them out.
I actually did this too, yeah.
And first I was going to get some stuff and put them in the shed, but the shed is really overflowing. And then I remembered, we have room under our bed.
Oh, I love underbed storage.
So I bought two big underbed storage units. you know, the ones on wheels that like slide out.
I do.
And I separated everything by size. I labeled the sections of the underbed storage. Like, so there's newborn, 0 to 3, 3 to 6, 6 to 9 or 12, whatever. And then put everything together and shoved it under the bed.
So satisfying.
It was very satisfying. So I'm feeling nested. I'm going to wash everything when I take it out.
And in a year, when you go under the bed and pull that shit out, it's going to feel so, you're going to thank your current day self.
Totally. So that was very exciting. Now we just have to figure out how to turn Matt's office into an office suitable for two.
No big deal.
We're currently sitting in this office. It is not built for two.
Matt has approximately 30 guitars in here?
Something like that.
It's very impressive.
Impressive is a word for it. Well, yes.
I think your husband's cool.
Oh, okay.
Can I tell you something that happened to me before we break?
Yes.
We break for a
minute? I would love to hear what happened to you.
I had mentioned, I believe on last week's episode, that I was going through a little bit of a health issue. It resolved, which was good.
I'm very relieved to hear that.
Me too, because I had a moment of panic. But I will say it was a good lesson for me about what I can control and what I can't control. And I'm very grateful that I'm okay, but also just having to go through the experience of having a medical thing, not an emergency, but just like a thing I had to deal with quickly doing it. Because we've talked about this. There's an urge to avoid. Like, I did want to not make the doctor's appointment because I was scared of what I was going to find out. But I did it. I followed through. My doctor squeezed me in. And just having to sit with like the discomfort of not being in control of my health was very, it was a learning experience.
Yeah.
It was hard, but I feel very, I don't know, glad I had to see what that felt like, because there will be more medical issues to come. I know, because I'm not getting any younger.
None of us are.
Nope. And our bodies do weird shit. But anyway, I'm fine.
Good.
So that was nice. And I've been sleeping a ton.
Yay.
I finally have doried my sleep.
Yay.
To the point where I now read before I go to sleep. And if I don't get the reading in, I'm starting to feel annoyed. Mm. Like I need the reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken me about a month to get into this habit. Mm-hmm. So if you are like me, a person with a chaotic mess of a bedtime routine, just start reading at night, even for like a one page, because you'll just start getting into the habit. And the habit will grow. And now I'm like doing 45 minutes.
See?
It's really something.
It's so calming.
Oh, I know a lot of people have already figured this out, but...
No, but I'm glad you got here.
I am.
Welcome.
I'm so happy to be here. Feels great. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Anyway. Shall we take a brief break?
Let's do that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word. Don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you. Our guest today is Amanda Clayman. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Amanda is a financial therapist who helps people bring money into balance, which sounds very appealing, to be honest. Mm-hmm. She founded the financial wellness program for national arts nonprofit, the Actors Fund, where she pioneered a cognitive behavioral approach to financial education. And to learn more about the inglorious start to Amanda's financial wellness mission, you can read the story about her $19,000 haircut at AmandaClayman.com. Welcome.
Thank you, Dori. Thank you, Kate.
Hello.
Hi.
So money is a big topic among our listeners. We get a lot of questions about money, and there's a Facebook group, a spinoff group from our main group called Forever 35 Money, where people talk about this stuff. And when we raised the idea of having a financial therapist on the program, first of all, a lot of people were not aware that this was a thing that existed.
Including me.
So people were excited about that, and people had a lot of questions. But I thought before we got to the questions, if you want to give just kind of a brief overview about sort of what is it that you do and what is a financial therapist?
A financial therapist, well, I should say first and foremost, it's not a sort of protected term, meaning there's not like an official definition that has, you know, three bullet points and everybody uses it. What it basically means is somebody who is looking at the cognitive and emotional and behavioral elements to money, and also sort of environmental. And my background is in social work. So, you know, thinking macro and micro is part of our person and environment approach. So essentially where I maybe differ from a financial advisor, a financial planner, is I'm not giving financial advice around what you should do with your money. I actually remain very neutral in terms of offering any type of particular advice. What I'm really advising on and coaching people through is their process with money. So there are basic ways that we can be healthy in our approach to money. And my belief is that when we have a healthy relationship with an approach to money, that actually becomes sort of the framework for which we can engage in all the different problems and challenges that arise in our financial lives.
That sounds great.
And it's the piece, honestly, sort of in my bio, I tease this very odd sounding thing of the $19,000 haircut, because my interest in this topic began with having a pretty spectacularly awful financial life myself. I got myself into a lot of debt. I had this emotional, impulsive, very shameful and blaming sort of relationship with money. And I couldn't do any of the things that I wanted to do to change my financial life until I really changed the foundation of how I related to and understood money, and how I learned to self-regulate in other ways too. So I wasn't just using money in ways to try to make myself feel better in lots of situations. And as I came to terms with that, I really thought, like, why isn't this a thing? Like, I knew what I was supposed to do. I just didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because I'm not like a giant risk taker in my life. And it's sort of like hilarious to me that at some point in my mid-20s, I was like, I'm going to just set off and create this thing I couldn't find any other models for it, but I could really see such a strong need. And so it became my mission to try to fill that need.
That's very cool. So I guess we will get right into it. I think it's probably safe to say that one of the most common questions we get are from people who they and their partner have different ideas about money. This is probably something that you see constantly.
Absolutely. I would say, honestly, like 50% of my caseload is couples.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I guess I will start with this kind of specific question that I think speaks to a sort of broader issue. Okay. And this is from the Forever 35 Money group where we solicited questions for Amanda. I have awful money anxiety that I'm working with my therapist through. I just can't seem to shake it, though. I grew up in an environment where money was a constant stressor. I saw cars get repossessed. My family filed for bankruptcy, and I had to walk away, from my childhood home. My church at times had to donate gift cards for groceries, and I'd wake up to hear my mom and dad fighting over money more days than not. Now that I'm an adult and my husband and I are in a very secure position with significantly more savings than a lot of 28-year-olds have. We follow a budget, put money into savings and a retirement fund, budget for fun money and vacations, and yet I still can't shake the stress associated with money. I feel like I'm constantly hoarding money instead of enjoying my life. My husband will ask, what's the magic number that needs to be in our bank account that will make you feel safe? And honestly, I don't know. Any suggestions on how to help?
I love this question because I think it's so representative of a lot of people and how we we struggle because cognitively we can see that we are safe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But on an emotional level, we just can't get ourselves to feeling mm-hmm. safe. And her husband's approach to say, okay, I get it. You don't feel safe. What's the number that will make you feel safe? This is where I think a lot of people just struggle to speak each other's language or really understand what the source of the
because it's not about the number.
It really isn't. Right. But like, that's a good place to start because sometimes, honestly, the problem is that someone is vague. They may not know what the number is. And once they know what the number is, that may actually do the trick. But if they have specificity, if they're able to really be clear on the numbers, and it sounds like she's able to do that, because a lot of people, they just can't even get themselves to look. Mm-hmm. So she's already doing sort of step one, which is being able to look at it. But the feeling is still there. So very clearly in her description of what happened in the childhood is a lot of trauma around money. And trauma is remembered in the body. So she is having a feeling problem that's masquerading as a thinking problem.
Interesting.
So she's trying to come at this from a problem solving sort of a approach to say, okay, I need to get to this thing, this event that's going to make me, that's going to solve the trauma that lives in my body. But I think that the way for her to meet that feeling and eventually move through it is to really recognize and sort of sit into, in a way, the depth of the trauma that she experienced there and to stop trying to talk to the trauma, but rather to feel her way through it. So to be able, and there are lots of sort of trauma-based therapies that do address that where trauma lives in the body, like EMDR, and sort of we can relive aspects of the traumatic experience in order to release them and release their hold and desensitize ourselves to us, and so we're not so triggered around the topic. Mm-hmm. But I would say, and she says that she's working through it with her therapist, I believe, which is great. But to try to step away from solving it externally and thinking that it is about some magic number, but just to let herself fully embrace the pain of what she experienced, just like one would if they had a physical trauma, sexual trauma. We tend to sort of, and I don't know why it is, but we dismiss the idea that experiencing money as a trauma is a pretty significant injury that we can carry with us for the rest of our lives. And it's even more difficult because there's no way that we can really keep ourselves safe. We can't abstain from money. We can't avoid it. We're sort of forced to have to confront it and work through it eventually. But I'm glad that she has a supportive partner and a therapist there with her.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what would your advice be for her husband in terms of how to be as supportive as he can to her?
And also, just to hop onto that, what are some tips for two people coming to their finances, like partners in a relationship, coming to their finances from two such different experiences? How are you able to meet in the middle where you can have a conversation where everybody feels comfortable and secure and safe?
First, I would question the word comfortable. because I really do love working with couples. I'm the eternal optimist, honestly, when it comes to couples and money, because I think that most of us do a really good job of picking a partner who's going to be the yin to our yang.
Interesting.
And it's because there's a saying, your subconscious picks your partner.
Are you thinking about your partner in your head?
Interesting.
Yes, most of us, it's funny, I feel like everyone confesses to me like, oh, my partner's so different from me when it comes to money. And it's like,
Right.
Wow. Yeah.
But that's the great way. But the idea of having a loving and supportive and committed partnership is that you don't have to be all things all the time. You can specialize a little bit. You can fill in each other's nooks and crannies, hopefully. And, It often, when these parts aren't sort of working together fluidly, we can grind our gears and find ourselves really stuck in this battle, this conflict, or a place where, you know, the husband is in this case coming forward with what he envisions is the solution.
Yeah.
Here is the thing that's going to make this better. And he probably very earnestly wants to help his wife, yeah, and have her experience some relief here. But she's obviously not able to take that in. So on a sort of broader, you know, looking at all couples approach, I think we have to stop trying to be right when it comes to money. And that's really tricky because money is really tied to our most basic sense of survival.
I should get that tattooed on my forehead.
Stop trying to be right.
Yeah. interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, go on.
but rather look at how, like, think of it in terms of I bring these pieces to our life and my partner brings these other pieces to our lives. How do we make these fit together as well as they can? And how do we keep our process sort of fluid and loving and trusting and good communication and all of those foundational process elements in order for you to be able to let go,
yeah,
a little bit? And the thing that I love as a clinician about money is such a wonderful tool for compromise. It really is. If we stop saying, like, savings is good and spending is bad, or, like, you know, you're being a miser and you need to live for today. Like, if we come out of these absolutes, there's tremendous opportunity for us to say, I need to save X, you want to spend Y. How can we negotiate with each other? And it doesn't have to come down to, like, an even split dollar amount. It's more like, what's most important to me? What's most important to you? How can I... I try to move people even away from the idea of compromise to co-giving. Mm-hmm. Like, how can I give in ways that allow you to have our money to be a resource for what you need? And how can you give to me so that money can be a resource for what I need?
Boy, that is what Dory loves to say, reframing the narrative. I mean, is that not the definition right there?
Yes.
I honestly am having a little bit heart palpitations because money gives me such anxiety that even just having this conversation is making me feel anxious.
That's good. See, you're in your body.
Okay.
You're recognizing where you are.
Oh, boy.
I'm feeling like my mind is being blown right
me
now.
Me too. Mm-hmm. When Amanda leaves, are you and I both just going to go in a corner and call her husband?
Yeah. Be like, Matt.
We've got to discuss our finances right now in a way in which I co-give. I thought that was a really interesting way of reframing it. I would have been useful during many discussions that I've had with my partner.
It's really hard, though, in the moment. That's the funny thing is, like, we connect with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds right, but when we are in that, so, you know, when we're in survival mode, when we feel like somebody's threatening our ability to control this thing that we literally need to survive and feel safe, we are not necessarily in a related and grounded place. We are in our fight, flight, or freeze mode, and there's no... Just like with the first question about this overwhelming anxiety, when we're in that mode, we can't be reasoned with. We're not in a reasonable place. And so our first job is actually to not solve a money problem. It's to solve that feeling problem and try to get ourselves into a calmer state.
Kate, was there another question or topic that stuck out to you?
The topic of communicating as an adult with your parents about money.
I was hoping you...
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, we're just so simple.
You guys are the best.
But I do have, friends more and more who are starting to have to care for their parents, or maybe they've cared for their parents all along financially, but also putting them into homes, finding medical care. So we have a couple questions on that front. How do you prepare, think through, communicate about the potential need to support parents in old age, especially if you grew up without money and your parents don't have money? How are you expected to, or how can you provide for your parents and help them when you yourself are just trying to save? And then another question, how do you deal with talking to your parents about money when you are the more responsible one? This person says, I grew up on the poorer side, but I've always been lucky enough to have well-paying jobs, having stayed out of debt, and have a healthy retirement account. I'm worried about taking care of my parents as they hit retirement age, though. They're not awful with money per se, just typical Americans with a decent amount of credit card debt and very little savings. Of course, I love my family and would do whatever I could, but I also don't want to end up sacrificing my retirement to fund theirs. Even thinking about this makes me feel like a guilty monster throwing my wonderful parents on the street.
So I'm not sure because I wasn't reading along with the question as you were reading it, but the first thing that you said was, what is expected or what can I do? And I'm not sure if the word expected was in there or if that was sort of a Freudian slip.
Oh boy.
In how you were presenting it.
Yep. It was a Freudian slip on my part.
Interesting. Ooh.
But I think that the reason maybe that word came to you is that it's implied in every line of that problem, is that we are trying to guess what the right thing to do is. And we are deeply, deeply worried that the right thing is beyond, the right thing for somebody else is beyond what we're able to do with ourselves in terms of balancing our own needs and values with the needs of another person and certainly what we're expected as a good person or good child to be able to provide or ways that we can help and support somebody else. So it's a telling thing. And I think it's a good place to sort of check in with ourselves, because there was an article a long time ago. It sort of made the rounds of the viral internet about be an asker, not a guesser. Did you guys see that? That there are ways in which there are people who ask for what they want or need. And then there are people who try to guess what the other person has available or what it's okay to ask for. And we all have encountered askers. They're those people who maybe ask questions or sort of want us to like give or volunteer. And we're sort of like, oh, this is awkward. Why aren't you picking up on how awkward this is? Because I don't want to give it. And that sort of reinforces, if we're guessers, like, we are right. I don't want to cause this awkwardness to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to guess what's appropriate and what's available. And it's a lot freer to be an asker, right, than a guesser. It's very limiting and it's a huge emotional burden. So we have to maybe in this scenario when it comes to parents put ourselves in more of an asker mentality than a guesser mentality. So first of all, thinking again, like where what's bubbling up in me that feels like an expectation? Where do I, because I want to be a good person, where does my idea of a good person or good daughter start to come into, not conflict, but like, you know, like there's competition for your values, right? Just like there's competition for your money. And so there are competing values of wanting to be a good child and support your family, but that's also about you wanting to be a fiscally responsible adult and take care of your own financial future. So think of it as like one's not right or wrong. Again, we're stepping away from these absolutes and we're thinking in terms of these are my resources. There's competition for these resources. How do I want to balance the desire to help my parents with my desire, because I fully deserve to have my own needs met, to take care of myself and be financially responsible to myself. So first is sort of an inward look and getting clear about the money. For example, like, and I'll sort of jump to the practical side of this answer, which is it's not binary. It's not like I have to fulfill the entirety of my parents' need in order to be supportive to them. It can be, look, they're going to need an extra $300 a month, you know, in order to pay their bills. Can I have a boundary around what my sort of support would be? And in order to do that, in order to have a boundary, we need to have clarity around what we have available to give and what their need is. So it's not some big, vague sense of have and need.
Yeah.
It's really, we can be in the middle with that question. But it requires obviously clarity and also communication to get to that point. So we can cover that part of it if you'd like.
Yeah.
Next, the communication part. It's a tough one, I will say, because I don't know much about what these, I mean, we know they're wonderful parents. They haven't made a giant catastrophic mess of their financial lives. We're not hearing the sort of like tumultuous trauma that we had in the first question. It's just like they're regular people,
yeah,
right, with financial burdens. They haven't really been able to get ahead in the way that it's hard for so many of us to get ahead. And that may be a combination of environment and their own behavior. And so we want to be able to have a way to talk to our parents that doesn't shame them for their behavior or seem judgmental of their behavior, but we want to be as neutral as possible. And that's asking a lot, yeah, right? We are not naturally neutral,
yeah,
when it comes to money.
Or our parents.
Or our parents. Yeah.
Exactly. Loaded topics.
But we can also bring the truth of where we're at and to make it more about feelings and the relationship than it is about, again, judging or blaming somebody for being in the circumstances that they are. So even saying like, you know, mom and dad or mom and dad and dad, I worry about this because financial security is really important to me. And I've really tried to organize my life around this vision for mm-hmm. my future. And it's also important to me to be a good daughter, a good child. And I worry that you're in this situation where you're not going to be safe in your future. And I wouldn't be able to rest and feel secure in my own finances if I was worried about you. I wonder if this is a topic that we can look at. I, you know, feel uncomfortable about it too. It's awkward for me, but I also don't want to worry and wonder. Right. So can we have this conversation? Can we look at this together?
Yes, we can. I think that's also such a great conversation to have before something catastrophic happens.
Yes.
Because so much of our concern with our parents is as health concerns and needing, if there's an emergency or if their health shifts dramatically, knowing what's in place financially is so key.
It's true, but it, like everything, we always think I will get to it tomorrow.
Yeah, yep. And then you don't.
But you're absolutely right. It is so much easier to have it ahead of the event.
Never think about it until the event,
though. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Well, I was hoping we could switch to the opposite side of things and talk about children.
Oh, boy.
So, this question, I thought was really important. How do you raise fiscally responsible children without making them feel anxious or obsessive about money. Basically, I want my girls to understand that money is a tool to living the life you want and that you can afford anything, but not everything. And then a related question was, how open should you be about your finances with your children?
Mm. Oh, interesting question.
These are good ones. So if I wander, I hope you'll bring Please. Me back and refocus me because there's a lot in there. So we all, if we're parents, want to raise fiscally responsible children, right? We've seen children who we consider sort of spoiled, or maybe we've considered our own children spoiled. Mm-hmm. But it's tricky because in my opinion, there's no one-size-fits-all sort right. of method to use. And I say that because my secret / not so secret fear as a parent is that I'm definitely in a, like, cobbler's children have no shoes sort of household.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Like, I am very up on the literature of how to raise fiscally responsible children. But the practical application of that yeah. isn't necessarily so consistent with my parenting style, which is a little bit more like just related and in the moment and not always as structured as I know other structured parents are. So, like, people who are really structured in their approach to parenting, I think the advice they want to take in advice, they just want instructions. Tell me how to do it. Mm-hmm. I'll do it. I have the instructions, but we tend to be a little bit more freewheeling in our chaotic household. So for all you other sort of chaotic household families out there.
Can I ask a quick question? Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. How yeah. old are your children? How many children do you have?
I have two girls, 11 and almost 7.
Okay, great.
And we started very early with, like, let's do allowance uh-huh. and we'll work on, like, jars of spend, save, and give. And
yep, okay.
And first, we never had change to give allowance. That was our first hurdle. We did not have single dollar bills. Then I got dollar bills, but we would just forget to do allowance.
That's
because
where I'm at.
The challenge was my young child was not interested in money, my eldest.
Oh, interesting.
She, like, I was bringing the horse to water and the horse was not drinking.
Yeah.
And so we just sort of waited on really active, sort of prescriptive teaching of money with her. And in the meantime, what I focused on was creating more of a sort of, like, passively positive environment for her with money and trying to engage her in developmentally appropriate ways. Like, if we went to a restaurant or we were at the grocery store, I'd be like, how much do you think this dinner cost? Or how much do you think the groceries were? Just to ground her in, like, she's very aware of the food that we usually have in the house. Does she have an idea of the dollar amount associated with that food? Mm. And then we could talk about tipping, you know, in a mm. restaurant and all these ways that mm. children need to learn to operate money. But in my experience, children have a very, very narrow span of attention when it comes to, like, quote unquote, very special talks about money. So really just trying to make it to set the to normalize the idea that money is something that we need to think about and know how to use and make decisions about. It's something that it's okay to discuss. And of course, when it comes to discussions about money, that quickly goes from me, you know, asking engaging questions around how much groceries cost to, like, so are we rich? Are we poor? You know, those more uncomfortable
right.
things. Is so-and-so rich? How much does our house cost? You know, like, these are the questions that, like, turn our blood cold, I think.
Yeah. How much money do you make?
Right.
Yeah.
Is that more or less than so-and-so?
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. So one tip / trick for parents is to think about or to get space to think about it, because we are going to have an immediate reaction to that. And one way that you can get space and also better understand where the question is coming from is saying, huh, why do you ask? Because you may be thinking of an answer to a question which is not actually the question. Mm.
That's such good advice.
You need to be an asker.
Yes. Children are askers. They're yeah. great askers. unless you shame them around money, and then they become guessers of what's appropriate to talk about.
But we shouldn't be guessers with our own children.
No, we should really make sure that curiosity about money, interest in money, is something that is really, really treated as normal and acceptable. Mm-hmm. And even if we're giving messages around like, that's private, I'm not comfortable talking about that just now because here's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid because it's private that, you know, you're a little kid and you'll talk about it with your friends. So maybe we save that to talk about when you're a little older. So you are validating the child's right to ask the question. You're validating your own, you're establishing your own right to say what your boundaries are around talking about it. But you're also acknowledging the feeling, because children, because they're dependent little creatures, are programmed to be super sensitive to adults' feelings. So for example, if a child asks these sensitive questions and the parent is uncomfortable, but the parent is not able to sit with their own feelings of discomfort, a parent might shame the child for asking that question. And the child knows on an intuitive emotional level, the child's picking up what you're feeling.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is, I blame you for making me uncomfortable by asking this question. Mm. And that's a lot for a kid to burden, to carry that burden with them into their adult relationship with money. So it's okay to be in this space with your child and normal to help socialize them around what questions and conversations and information is appropriate to get into, without sort of throwing off your own emotional burden as a sort of shame rock that you then heap on your child's psyche. How's that for a comfortable metaphor?
Shame rock.
We haven't heard that one before, the shame rock.
No, but I like it.
Just came up with it right here.
Was there one more question that really spoke to you?
Well,
actually, before sorry, because this was a thing that I wanted to circle back on.
Oh, yeah.
I talked a lot just now about my older daughter.
Yeah.
And how we approached money with her. And one of the things that has been most humbling but helpful for me in the idea of parenting around money is how different my children are when it comes to money. And that released me in a way from feeling like there's a set program that one can do that makes a financially responsible child. Because my older one is, now that she's 11, you know, she's a good saver. She saved her allowance for a year and a half and bought an iPad.
Wow. Like,
she's great at managing money. My little one only wants to make money. Like, she essentially, like, sprung from the womb as, like, a Shark Tank contestant. She just wants to have, even as a little kid, lemonade stands. And she would set, like, a, you know, lemonade is what, like 50 cents, a dollar? Like, she was like, lemonade is $2. And then she would be like a carnival barker outside of our house, just shaking down adults.
Oh my God.
For money, and like using the power of like 5-year-old cuteness as a weapon to just make money. Her favorite thing right now is she uses her allowance to go to flea markets and buy stuff that she then plays auction. This is her favorite thing, where she auctions this junk to her father and I.
Wow.
And coerces us into like giving her more money. We don't know how to stop this. We don't want to buy this junk from her, but like we feel like it's kind of also a good thing to play.
Has she watched Flea Market Flip?
She has not, but she does. I mentioned Shark Tank because that's her favorite show and she's still just 6.
Oh my God.
Wow, what an interesting kid.
Fascinated with money. She wants like she saw somebody who had a towel that had like a $100 bill printed on it. And she's like, I want that towel. Like, she's obsessive.
Wow.
Around getting money.
Yeah.
And my older daughter is very into like animal rescue and she has a big heart for animals. And she asked me the other day, like, what's the best job where I can make a lot of money, but I don't have to work that much because I just want to have that money. I know. But she wants that money to rescue animals.
Aww.
So she realizes that like to do things that she wants to do, you need money.
Right.
But she's like, I know that there's I don't make money from rescuing animals, so I need to like make money over here to do this thing. Whereas the little one's just straight up like, I want to be rich.
Just hustling everywhere.
I love it.
But these children require very different, I have to meet them where they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they require such radically different things in terms of me being a good fit in providing them the support they need to grow into
right
healthy, good, financially responsible adults.
Can we ask this question about spending?
That's the one I wanted to ask.
Great.
The last one?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Okay. I am working on getting myself out of credit card debt. I have a monthly budget and I'm actively putting more than my minimum to pay them off. I've been able to shift some of my impulsiveness away from buying things like makeup, clothes, etc., but still find myself excusing this when it comes to food. Whether it's buying produce or supplements, all in the name of, quote, wellness, I end up going over my budget every month. Any tips for addressing positive behavior and habit change in regards to impulse spending would be wonderful.
I have two thoughts in response to this question. Number one is to try to get a sense of neutrality, if not softening our judgment to ourselves when it comes to the ways that we use money to take care of ourselves. So again, in the sort of matrix of competing needs idea, there's a need for or a desire for financial security in the form of being debt-free. But there's also a need to take care of ourselves today and to feel like our money is there to nurture us and provide the things or give us the need, give us the things that we need in the moment to feel our best, right? And these are not necessarily absolute. So I would look, number one, at where that needle is for this person sending in this question. And it might be that in order to stay on track, she needs to adjust a little bit more over into the today's needs side as opposed to the future. Sometimes the rate at which we try to achieve goals is overly taxing to us, and we will eventually either sort of abandon it or rebel. I mean, these are small rebellions, but sometimes we just can't get ourselves to a long-term goal if we're trying to get there too quickly. And I will say for me personally, that was the thing that ultimately helped me get out of debt, was that I was really trying to give, I was using a budget as a form of punishment, really. I was bad for being in debt. And so I would try to have nothing in my life and put everything toward getting out of debt. And my mother was the one, once I confessed that I was in this situation, who helped me come up with having an amount of money, a discretionary sort of budget for myself each month that was sufficient. So I didn't feel trapped. I didn't feel the need to rebel or act out or abandon it. And once I had that and that felt stable for me, then I was able to just move consistently through paying because I needed to be taken care of and to feel safe first. So it may be that this person really just needs to tweak her formula a little bit. So that's one possibility. And the other possibility is I'm wondering sort of how she's categorizing these things. So like we can get a sense that like impulse spending on like fun things, frivolous things is bad, right? But if it's for our body, if it's food, if it's wellness, those are good expenses. So maybe those are okay. And yet that spending is in conflict with the goal that she has set for herself. So maybe to just sort of reframe as it's not about impulse is bad. It's not about things that take care of my body, food, et cetera, are good. It's just I really need to tune out that voice that says I need to have this and I need to take steps to stay focused on my goal of getting out of debt. I also wonder, because one thing that I see a lot with clients is how we use money to self-regulate. So it may be that these little treats, if you will, are sort of giving her a mood boost. Like, I'd be curious, I would ask her if I was sitting down with her, sort of, when is this occurring? Is it at the end of your workday? Is it on a weekend where you maybe feel bored or you're trying to decompress from the anxiety of the week? Like, really looking at where that behavior is rooted in the schedule and events of her life, and seeing if maybe she needs to just sort of be able to meet her stress need in a different way. But what we don't want to do is ignore the underlying need, try to just, you know, shove it down. But a way to be gentle with ourselves in that moment so that we can process the emotion and move through it without needing to act on it.
I'm going to take that and use it for sure.
All of this.
Mm-hmm.
Really just speaking to me.
Yeah. Amanda, this was amazing.
I'm so glad.
It's been so helpful.
It's just, it's always, I mean, I love it. Truly, I love being here. I love this topic. I love this work. But it is always, it keeps fueling my mission, because I feel like in most cases when I'm talking about it, it's a new message for people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feels that way to me.
They haven't thought about it. And that to me is just such a sort of sign of where we struggle as a culture, as a society, to really be in a healthy place financially as individuals, as couples and families, as societies. And then, you know, what are our priorities as a nation?
Yeah. So we mentioned your website at the top of the show, AmandaClayman.com. Is there anywhere else that you want people to find you?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Amanda Clay, MandaClay. I am on Instagram, Amanda Clayman. I have a Facebook page.
And can people work with you remotely as well as locally?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I do love to do workshops and things, and we'll travel sometimes to do that. But certainly you can get in touch with me online.
Great.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
So, Kate, how did Christmas shopping go?
Well, Dory.
Yes.
I'm still at it.
Okay.
But I have made a big dent in it, which is good.
That's impressive.
Especially because I'm trying to buy things from small businesses. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to really do that early, because they not all of them have the same, you know, like you can't overnight via Amazon Prime from a small business.
Right.
So I'm trying to be a little bit more conscientious as a shopper. But I will tell you one thing that I have decided to do.
Yes.
I got an email today from a friend of mine whose daughter's gymnastics team is doing a gift wrapping fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a donation and they wrap all your presents.
Ooh, and that's worth every penny.
Yeah. I hate wrapping. It takes me forever. And I'm not good at it. You know how some people are good rappers?
Mm-hmm.
So my thought was that if I get my stuff together, I could maybe make this donation to a gymnastics team, which seems worthwhile.
Totally.
Get my gifts wrapped.
Love it.
So there we go. That's my plan, but it's in action.
Okay.
I have started, which I feel really good about, because I'm not an early gift getter.
Right.
And I'm also, one thing I might do for my family is make a donation to a different place in everybody's honor.
Nice.
You know, and so I'm doing my research.
You're a good person.
Yeah, no. I'm fine.
You're a good person.
I think I'm fair. I would say I'm average, but thank you. Okay, so tell me, your kitchen, which I've seen,
mm-hmm.
you were going to finish setting it up.
Yep.
And start cooking again.
Yep. I did start cooking again.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What did you make? Do you recall?
I made a meal kit.
But still, it's food.
It was food that I made myself.
Yeah.
And I ate it.
Congrats.
I didn't just heat something up in the microwave or order takeout, you know?
Yeah, I know. You made a food.
I made a food, which, you know, was something that I usually enjoy doing that I just stopped doing for a long time.
And have you gotten resettled into your new kitchen space?
Yeah, it's like pretty much done. I feel like, I mean, I mentioned this earlier in the episode, but like, I feel like I really brought all of my organizing, my newly learned organizing skills to bear.
One thing we're going to touch upon in a later episode is kind of what we've taken away from doing this podcast for a year. And I do feel like both of us have gotten more organized, or not even gotten more organized, but like learned a little bit how to do it.
Yes.
Or maybe just learned how to buy bins.
Well, one thing I learned about myself, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but one thing I learned about myself a while ago is that if I buy a bin, it needs to be clear.
Same.
Like,
you got to see in the bin.
Get out of here with your opaque bins.
Or your straw baskets. Or your,
exactly. They look nice, but...
How do you know what's in
it? How do you know what's in it? I'm going to soon replace the straw baskets in my bathroom with clear bins.
Maybe we should do a whole episode just dedicated to clear bins. The joy of a clear bin.
So, what is on tap for this coming week?
So, Dory.
Yes.
I was doing so well getting in bed early.
Mm.
I was doing so well reading at night and just winding down. I'm going to be honest with you. I've lost it.
Oh, no.
I've lost it. I don't know where it's gone. It's within reach.
Okay.
But I need to pull it back.
Okay.
I definitely was on my phone doing a deep dive. I just love a deep, like the 11:45 deep dive is something on my phone is not something I need to be doing.
No.
But I was doing it.
The phone needs to be asleep at that time. The phone gets tired.
The phone does need a good 8 hours.
That's what I'm saying.
So I've got to try to find my way back to that because it was feeling really great and I've kind of let it slide. It's very interesting how it's so easy to slide back into our cozy old habits that don't serve us.
It really is. There's a book that I didn't read that came out a few years ago called The Power of Habit.
Oh, that might be a good one to read.
Yeah.
I started How to Break Up with Your Phone. I just have not gotten past the beginning.
Are you reading it on your phone?
It's an audiobook because I had a lot of credits.
Interesting.
On Audible, which is on my phone. I see what happened. Okay. Well, how about you?
As you and I briefly discussed off air, I have a new personal project that I'm working on.
Yeah, you do.
And I'm going to try to kind of get it into a good place this week.
I'm excited about
Thanks. I don't mean to be like mysterious about it, listeners, but...
You're working on something that you're trying to really make into a concrete thing.
Yes. All will be revealed in good time.
Well, and I also think you had a spell of not feeling well in the first and a half trimesters of your pregnancy, where it was hard. You were really resting and nurturing and taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. So now you're kind of coming back to some things.
The old me.
What do you say?
The old me.
Oh, the old you. Yeah. I said the ill me.
The ill me.
The old door. Or just the revised Dory.
Yeah. Dory 2.0, if you will. Well, on that note,
gee whiz. Here we are.
It's been great talking to you.
Likewise.
As usual.
And listeners, it's always great talking to you. Mm-hmm. If you want to wringle dingle us. Why did I do that?
Oh my God. Wringle dingle.
Give us the old wringle dingle. Is that a thing?
That sounds so dirty.
Oh, it does. Does sounds dirty. Like by wringle dingle, I meant give us a call at her voicemail, which is 781-591-0390. And you can email us or wringle dingle us on the email, which is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
We also have a Facebook group, facebook.com/group/forever35podcast. And under the about section, you can see all of the many spinoff groups.
There's a gratitude group.
Yeah.
Keeps my heart afloat.
It's
that
so
group.
Nice.
So great.
Yeah.
The password is serums.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Should have mentioned that.
And if you like the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, tell a friend, or mention us on social media.
And our Instagram is @forever35podcast, and our Twitter is @forever35pod.
And Dory, is every product that we mention on the show available on our website, forever35podcast.com?
I believe it is, Kate.
Well, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
This podcast, Forever 35, is hosted and produced by Dory Shafir and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio.
Bye, y'all.
Ringle dingle.
Ew.